Hello, my friends. This is Dr. Beter. Today is June 28, 1979, and this is my audio letter number 47. The final Friday in May last month was a sunny spring day in Chicago. It was a perfect day to fly, and O'Hare Airport was busy as usual. Inside the terminal complex, thousands of air travelers were rushing to and from their flights. Nearby, the runways were alive. Airplanes were taking off and landing in a steady stream, one right after another. It was just another day at the world's busiest airport. Shortly before 3 o'clock that Friday afternoon, 258 passengers boarded American Airlines Flight 191. It was a DC-10 jumbo jet bound for Los Angeles. With its crew of 13, there were 271 people aboard when the doors were closed. Then the DC-10 was rolled away from the terminal and taxied out toward the runway. There, Flight 191 took its place at the end of a line of jets waiting to take off. Meanwhile, a passenger waiting in the terminal for a different flight was passing the time by taking snapshots. Reportedly, the man with the camera was a pilot himself. Most flyers simply enjoy watching airplanes, and apparently he was no exception. Just after 3 p.m., the O'Hare Tower cleared Flight 191 for takeoff. The big DC-10 moved onto the end of the runway. Three mammoth engines, one on the tail and one under each wing, changed their tune from a whine to a roar. The engines strained like locomotives in their mounts, and the jumbo jet began moving down the runway. Half a minute or so later, after rolling a mile and a half, the nose of the DC-10 rotated upward for takeoff. Up to that moment, everything had been normal and routine. But then, without warning, the world began to end for Flight 191. The engine under the left wing suddenly ripped loose. It lurched forward, then up and over the top of the wing. It smashed down onto the runway, but the suddenly crippled DC-10 continued to climb. The plane reached an altitude of about 600 feet. But by then, it had rolled steeply to the left. The wings were vertical instead of level, and the DC-10 began to fall. Moments later, the plane disappeared in a giant fireball as it hit the ground. In the terminal, the man with the camera caught a picture of the airliner on its side in the air. Moments later, he was photographing the fireball, which was partially obscured by airport buildings. Later, the man who took those famous pictures, Michael Laughlin of Ontario, Canada, gave his reactions to UPI. He reportedly said, quote, "After I had taken all the pictures, I just stood there stunned, wondering to myself, did this really happen? Did I really take these pictures? Did that plane really crash? I thought there has to be some other explanation for this crazy airplane turning over and for all that fire. I just couldn't believe it. I just stood there shaking." Unquote. My friends, reality is always hard to accept whenever it is unpleasant. Our minds play tricks and tell us it just cannot be. Like the man who photographed the crash in DC-10, we don't want to believe our own eyes and ears. Instead of accepting the truth as it is when it disturbs us, we try to deny its existence. Right now, this is happening to some listeners to the Dr. Beter audio letter. Last month, I made public one of the most carefully guarded of all intelligence secrets, that is, the existence of organic robotoids. As I explained last month, they are now the key fact of life in understanding current world events. Without knowing this very important secret, you will have no hope of understanding present and coming events. Even so, some of my listeners are not waiting for events to speak for themselves. Instead, they are shakily telling themselves, there just has to be some other explanation for the strange things in today's news. These people, my friends, are turning away from the audio letter. They want only to have their ears tickled with the words they like to hear. They want only to hear the words they have heard before over and over again, year in and year out. Runaway government, taxes, dishonest politicians, the Russian threat, and so on. With these things, they can feel dissatisfied yet content, reassured that nothing really ever changes. But as I said last month, I knew very well that this would happen before I ever said a word about the Robotoids. I knew that there would be a falling away by some who have followed the audio letter up to now. But there is only one way that the audio letter can serve those who do choose to listen. That way is to continue to reveal the truth exactly as it is. If I were to withhold crucial information whenever it is frightening or unfamiliar, perhaps I could avoid losing any listeners. But then the audio letter would end up serving no one. No one, that is, but the enemies of our Lord Jesus Christ. When our Lord walked the earth 2,000 years ago, he said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." He gave the good news that a new day was dawning for those ready to accept it. He began awakening his followers from their slumber, and those who were benefiting from the oppressive status quo of that day began to feel threatened. Soon Jesus made it clear that he was not talking about politics or military conquest, but something deeper than that. Many of his followers fell away in disappointment, but the ruling circles felt even more threatened. Their real control over the people was through their beliefs, and Jesus was opening their eyes with the truth. So they had him crucified, and the people cheered. My friends, the French have a saying that the more things change, the more they stay the same. Our modern world is radically different in some ways from the Mediterranean world of 2,000 years ago. Yet today as then, there are those who want to keep you ignorant and asleep so that they can control and use you. The Dr. Beter audio letter is interfering with these plans simply by revealing the truth from behind the scenes. And because the influence of the audio letter is growing faster and faster, a hate campaign is now underway in an effort to destroy it. Right now, some people are turning away, but others are awakening from their slumber. Like Rip Van Winkle, they are beginning to open their eyes after living for years in a dream world of the past. They are beginning to ask questions and to see for themselves what is really taking place in our world. After years of sitting glued to the television sets, more and more Americans are beginning to talk to one another again. People are gathering in groups to listen to the audio letter and then arguing about it. Concerned listeners are making countless copies of my audio letters to give to friends and relatives. In New York City and elsewhere, unauthorized copies are being sold by illegal scalping operations for $10 and more. And these homemade and scalped copies of my audio letters are themselves being listened to in groups and further recopied. The majority of those who are benefiting from the audio letter nowadays are doing so without contributing to its support. Free and scalped copies, after all, do nothing to help sustain the audio letter, which is expensive and difficult to produce. Nevertheless, the Dr. Beter audio letter is having an impact that is growing wider every day. Now that the four Rockefeller brothers have all left the scene, as I have revealed in recent months, even the major media are beginning to take notice of the audio letter. This past Easter Sunday morning, April 15, 1979, it was a syndicated feature article in the Sunday magazine of the Washington Post. A month later, on May 17, it was an article on page B2 of the New York Times. And earlier this month, on June 11, I was contacted by a producer for the CBS television program 60 Minutes about the Guyana story. Because of the growing impact of the audio letter, those who benefit by keeping you asleep and ignorant feel increasingly threatened by it. And so a hate campaign has now erupted in an effort to destroy the audio letter. All kinds of techniques are being used in this hate campaign. Articles are being printed in certain publications that stoop to outright libel in an effort to defame my personal reputation. Damaging rumors of all kinds are being circulated. Whisper campaigns are being stirred up with ridiculous stories about my family. Now, I'm told, they are even picking on my little 5-year-old daughter, Petra, saying somehow that Petra has a Russian name. Petra, my friends, is simply the female form of the Greek word meaning rock. It is also the name of an ancient, beautiful, and historical crossroads town in Jordan. The hate campaigners are all waving the flag in an effort to dispute the patriotism of the audio letter. But their arguments are based on deceit and fraud, not truth. Christ ones do not do such things. What is most significant is the timing of this hate campaign. All of the groups now attacking the Dr. Beter audio letter have one identifying characteristic in common. In every case, they have spent years in pointing accusing fingers at the Rothschilds. This has led many people with some knowledge of past history to accept the leadership of these organizations. And yet, years of finger-pointing by these groups has had no effect at all on the Rothschilds. The only people really affected are the duped ones, the followers of these groups and publications. Until very recently, the Rothschilds have actually been in a state of eclipse by the Rockefellers. But since the Bolshevik coup d'etat secretly terminated Rockefeller power early this year, the situation has changed. In the past 2 or 3 months, I have focused attention on the Rothschilds and their bid for renewed power. And as if on signal, the Dr. Beter audio letter is now under attack, supposedly by anti-Rothschild groups. False opposition, my friends, is a trick even older than Machiavelli. The hate campaign now underway will do its damage, but it will not stop the audio letter. My employer is our Lord Jesus Christ, and my audio letter series will not end until it is time to end. This month, I am beginning the 5th year of my audio letter. It has been another year of surprises and dramatic events. It was only 1 year ago next month that the oldest of the 4 Rockefeller brothers, John D. III, died abruptly in an alleged auto accident. And it was only 5 months ago that the all-out Bolshevik coup d'etat against the Rockefellers began with the murder of Nelson Rockefeller. Today, the Bolsheviks themselves are in retreat, thanks to the Russian organic robotoids. So the years to come will hold even more surprises for us all. My topics this month are topic number 1, the scientific background of the Russian robotoids. Topic number 2, the Russian strategy to dismantle Bolshevik power. And topic number 3, the shifting currents between war and peace. Topic number 1. In the spring of 1973, my book, The Conspiracy Against the Dollar, was published by George Braziller, New York, New York. In the book, I revealed in detail how forces were being set in motion deliberately to destroy the United States dollar. I named a lot of names, and I explained the role being played by various individuals and multinational corporations. Of all the individuals I named in the book, the most important was that of the late David Rockefeller. He was the kingpin in the plan to destroy our dollar and our economy, as I showed in the book. But when he was asked for his public comment about my book, he said, quote, "Interesting science fiction," unquote. But as events have proven, my book was anything but science fiction. I was a lone voice in 1973 because I was revealing things that were not publicly known. Instead, until I went public with them, these things had been known only to a handful of the most powerful in America and abroad. For that reason, many people found what I revealed then hard to believe. Yet today, the things I warned about have already come true or are happening now behind the scenes. When I wrote my book in 1973, Americans had yet to experience an embargo of foreign oil. The dollar was still thought of as almighty, and my warnings that it would soon shrivel sounded preposterous to many Americans. But today, who in his right mind would speak of the so-called almighty dollar? As for gold, Americans could not even own it legally in 1973 except under special circumstances. Very few Americans even thought about gold in 1973. So the plans I exposed in my book for gold prices to shoot up past $200 an ounce sounded ridiculous to many. But today, Who among us is unaware of the daily news reports about astronomical gold prices? In 1973, I spoke of stagnation with inflation, of shortages, of financial distress in municipal governments, and on and on. At that time, these things sounded too far out to many of my readers. They sounded like science fiction. But today, just look around you, my friends. Look at the gas lines, the trucker's strike, the defaults and near defaults by major cities, the prices that change almost daily in your grocery stores. Today, everyone talks about these things. They are just facts of life. But when I warned about them 6 years ago, I was ridiculed for saying they would happen because I was out of step with the crowd. The same thing is happening now in the wake of my revelations last month about the Russian organic robotoids. The conventional wisdom, of course, is that there just cannot be such things. Or at least, if they are possible, they must lie far in the future, not now. But, my friends, the conventional wisdom is wrong, dead wrong. They are not only possible, but they are real, and they are walking among us right now. To those who are ignorant of the scientific advances that have taken place in the past 20 to 30 years, they sound incredible. But within a small select group of scientists, both in and out of government, here and abroad, the existence of robotoids is known. And certain of those who know and understand about them are faithful listeners to the Dr. Beter audio letter. As I mentioned in my introductory comments, those who seek to control us want to keep us all in a horse and buggy mentality. That way, we remain unaware of the forces we are confronting, and therefore more vulnerable. Ever since World War II began 4 decades ago, we Americans have been living with a shroud of secrecy in the military and scientific fields. As a result, most Americans today are actually living in the past without knowing it. But in my audio letters, I'm trying to bring you up to date with reality. For the past 4 years, I've been letting you in on developments which have taken decades to materialize in secret. Learning about all these things over such a short time span is like having the world itself change almost overnight. So it is little wonder that some of my listeners are getting a case of future shock from my audio letters. By the way, the term future shock is taken from the famous book titled Future Shock by Alvin Toffler. The book was published nearly 10 years ago in 1970 by Random House. Toffler defines future shock as, quote, the shattering stress and disorientation that we induce in individuals by subjecting them to too much change in too short a time, unquote. In his book, Toffler called attention to the fact that numerous rapid and drastic new developments are taking place today without people quite knowing how to cope with it all. Among these developments, Toffler discussed the revolutionary advances in biology and genetics. Quoting leading scientists in the field, he gave examples of astonishing things which are either possible now or will be soon. All of these are fascinating to read about, and many are frightening as well. In particular, several items point directly toward organic robotoids, although the book does not say so. As I explained last month, an organic robotoid is an artificial robot-like creature. It is a kind of biological machine with a biological computer brain. With this in mind, consider the words of Arne Tesilius, a biochemist and Nobel Prize winner. As quoted in Future Shock nearly a decade ago, he said, it is quite obvious that computers so far are just bad imitations of our brains. Once we learn more about how the brain acts, I would be surprised if we could not construct a sort of biological computer. Such a computer might have electronic components modeled after biological components in the real brain. And at some distant point in the future, it is conceivable that biological elements themselves might be parts of the machine, unquote. Dr. Tesilius was on the right track with these words of 10 years ago, but he was too conservative. At that time, the Russians were already on the threshold of their key breakthrough, which I referred to last month. That breakthrough had to do with a biological computer brain, which is the key to a successful robotoid. In a few moments, I'll tell you more about that. In other places, too, one can find many bits and pieces of information that point straight toward robotoids. But you will not often find this information on television or in the newspapers. Instead, it crops up here and there in specialized publications directed at particular audiences. An example of this is the book The Dynamics of Change, published in 1967 by Prentice Hall, Englewood Cliffs, New Jersey. The book is copyrighted by Kaiser Aluminum and Chemical Corporation, having first published all the material in 6 issues of Kaiser Aluminum News. The revolution in biology and genetics is only a very small part of the subject matter in the book. Even so, listen to just a few brief quotes. Under the heading Genetic Manipulation, quote, "The ability to control the formation of new beings may be one of the most basic developments of the future. Recent discoveries about the nucleonic acids, the basic building blocks of life, have led to the belief that man may someday be able to treat genes in such a way that desired characteristics can be realized." Unquote. Under the heading Direct Education of Brain Cells, quote, "Experiments indicate that certain chemicals in the brain will, when implanted in another brain, transfer knowledge." Unquote. Under the heading Man-Machine Symbiosis, quote, "Computers exist which can learn, remember, see, seek goals, reason, walk, sing on key, talk, be irritable, play games, grasp, adapt to an environment, and even design improvements in themselves." Unquote. My friends, remember, these things were published for public consumption and a dozen years ago. Further, under the same heading, quote, "Man-like computers may one day contain plasma, circulating through a viscera-like envelope, allowing them to be self-healing," unquote. Finally, under the heading Human Robots, quote, "An electronic circuit that imitates 2 neurons, the cells of a human brain, has been built and has enabled a robot to deal with some unexpected situations. But the neuron structure was bulky. The brain has billions of neurons, meaning an incredible miniaturization job will be necessary before truly human robots are developed." Unquote. Since those words were written, of course, incredible things have been done in miniaturizing electronic computers. For example, a mere dozen years ago, there was no such thing as an electronic hand calculator. Within a few years, they were on the market, but at a cost of hundreds of dollars. Today, just a few scant years further on, they are all over the place, tiny, inexpensive, and able to do things only bulky computers could do a decade ago. But these things only hint very vaguely at the scientific strides that have made organic robotoids a reality. The man-made biological machine, known as a robotoid, is remarkable from head to foot. But the most astonishing thing about them is their ability to simulate human beings, not just in appearance, but in behavior. In other words, the most crucial and most amazing thing about a Russian organic robotoid is its biological computer brain. The developments that were destined to lead to Russia's breakthrough in robotoid brain research began 32 years ago, in 1947. In that year, a Hungarian-born physicist, Dr. Denis Gabor, conceived of a way to make 3-dimensional photographs called holograms. It was a revolutionary scientific discovery, and it was destined to lead to the Nobel Prize for Dr. Gabor. He did not receive the prize until 24 years later, in 1971. By then, holograms were a reality in numerous laboratories worldwide. And yet, most members of the general public still had not heard of holography. And even today, more than 3 decades after Dr. Gabor's original discovery, holography is still unfamiliar to the public as a whole. In 1947, Dr. Gabor's theory pointed the way toward holography, but at that time, holograms could not actually be made. What was needed in order to make them was something called monochromatic light, that is, light of just one wavelength. No one knew how to create that kind of light in 1947. But in 1960, the situation suddenly changed. That was the year the laser was invented. When lasers are discussed in public, attention is usually focused on just one of their amazing characteristics. That's the ability of a laser to produce a narrow, intense beam of light. The beam can travel great distances without spreading out and diffusing. Lasers pointed the way toward energy beam weapons, among other things. And as I revealed long ago in Audio Letter 26, this is what secretly spawned America's crash program to get to the moon in 1961. But the reason laser beams behave the way they do is that the light they produce is monochromatic, so they are made to order for generating holograms. Like lasers, holography has led to developments that were totally unexpected, and one of these was the Russian breakthrough in biological computer brains some years ago. When you hear how they work, you'll understand why robotoids act so much like the human beings they replace.